Welcome to the regular meeting of the Blacksburg Planning Commission for Tuesday, September 2nd. Regular meetings of the Blacksburg Planning Commission are held here in the Hedge Path Chambers of the Blacksburg Municipal Building on the first Tuesday of each month at 6:30. And citizens may address the Planning Commission at specified times on the agenda and are requested to adhere to the following. Please speak at the podium, state your name and address, direct comments only to the commission. Please limit speaking time to a maximum of 3 minutes. You'll have some help on the dais. And please speak only once during a specific hearing or comment period. A wireless microphone is available for those requesting the assistance. Please silence all cell phones, show respect for all speakers, and allow all opinions to be expressed in a tolerant atmosphere. With that, we'll call the meeting to order. May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Britt?
Here.
Mr. Ehrman?
Here.
Mr. Ford?
Here.
Ms. Jones?
Here.
Mr. Kassoff?
Here.
Mr. Cassie?
Here.
Ms. Reinhart? Ms. Walker?
Here.
I'm here. We have a quorum.
Great. We have a very lengthy consent agenda tonight. You're welcome to take a nap. But if you plan on attending next week's meeting, bring a sleeping bag. It's going to be a long one, I think. On the consent agenda are 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 items. The first is the approval of the Planning Commission minutes from August 5th, and the action, proposed action is to approve. The second item is CUP 25-2, the conditional use permit request for an automobile dealership in general commercial at 1711 North Main Street. And the proposed action is to schedule a public hearing for October 7th, 2025. The third item is CUP 25-3, a conditional use permit request for a dance hall use in downtown commercial at 130 Jackson Street. And the proposed action is to schedule a public hearing for October 7th, 2025. The fourth item is rezoning 25-7, Ordinance 2094, which is a rezoning request from general commercial to planned residential for mixed-use multifamily and commercial development at 702 University City Boulevard. And the proposed action is to schedule a public hearing for October 7th. The fifth item is rezoning 25-8, Ordinance 2595, a rezoning request from RM48 medium density multi-unit residential to PR planned residential for the development of 7 four-bedroom townhome units at 1709 and 1711 Whipple Drive. And the proposed action is to schedule a public hearing for October 7th. The sixth item is rezoning 25-9, Ordinance 2090, Tech Terrace PRD rezoning request from RM48 medium density multi-unit residential to PR planned residential for the redevelopment of an existing apartment complex into 1 7-story apartment building at 305 and 309 Webb Street and 800 Orchard Street. And the proposed action is to schedule a public hearing for October 7, 2025. The seventh item is AFD 25-1, Ordinance 2096, the withdrawal of approximately 4.672 acres of land from the Agricultural and Forestal District, AFD, at 701 Bishop Road. And the proposed action is to schedule a public hearing for October 7th. The eighth item is ZOA 60, Ordinance 2001, an amendment to amend the text of the town zoning ordinance to create a new downtown northwest zoning district in the area bounded by North Main Street, Turner Street, and Price's Fork Road. And the proposed action is to schedule a public hearing for October 7th, 2025. And the final item is rezoning 25-5 Tech Terrace PRD rezoning request at 305 and 309 Webb Street. And the proposed action is to recognize that the application has been withdrawn and has been resubmitted as rezoning 25-9. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Moving on to public hearings for tonight, we have three. The first is rezoning 25-6, ordinance 2091, Yellow Sulfur Apartments, PRD rezoning request at 3503 Holiday Lane from Balser and Associates, the applicant, for TPB Enterprises LLC, the owner. And we have a staff presentation by Carolyn Collins.
Good evening, everybody. I'm going to be going over rezoning 25-6, Yellow Sulfur Apartments PRD. This is a request to rezone 9.72 acres from general commercial and office to planned residential for a multifamily use. And here's an aerial of the property outlined in blue. And a little bit of an overview of the request. The development includes five four-story apartment buildings with a maximum of 464 bedrooms and a proposed 28% open space. It also includes a separate request to vacate the Holiday Lane right-of-way. And since the Planning Commission work session, the applicant has resubmitted some of their materials, which includes a new proffer statement as well as a revised site plan and the removal of one of the buildings. And here you can see an image of the master plan that was included in the application. The Holiday Lane right-of-way vacation request includes approximately 35,000 square feet and has been requested for the incorporation into the proposed residential development. Rezoning requests are evaluated for their conformity to the comprehensive plan, and the need and justification for this change falls upon the applicant to provide. The future land use map currently designates the site for commercial use, and if it were rezoned, the town would lose commercial land. However, it is designated as a UDA, which does support higher density residential. And the map here shows the future land use with the subject area outlined in blue designated as commercial. The site is located in an employment designated area. And the path to the future map includes a planned trail along Yellow Sulfur Road. In the zoning ordinance, there is a statement of purpose for each district, and the PR district allows for flexibility for the applicants to determine the best standards that would best fit their individual needs for their proposed development. And the intent and purpose of this district can be met in a number of ways. However, it is in exchange for the flexibility. The application plan and proffers are binding, and most changes would require the applicant to amend the PRD through a public hearing process. And here you can see an image of the current zoning map with the subject area outlined in blue, designated as general commercial as well as office. In the zoning ordinance, there are three types of regulations that govern new development. And the planned residential district allows the applicant to propose most of their district standards. However, use and design standards and development standards still apply unless specific modifications are requested. District standards apply to all development within a particular zoning district, and the standards for the office and general commercial are shown on the right side of the chart, and the left shows the proposed PRD standards. The proposed density for the planned residential development is 49.1 bedrooms per acre, which does exceed the maximum in the general commercial and office zoning districts, and occupancy would be limited to a family plus one unrelated individual or no more than two unrelated individuals. The PR district requires a minimum of 20% open space, and the applicant has proposed a ratio of 28% open space. And some of this open space is proposed to include a gym, pool, dog park, as well as additional green space throughout the development. Use and design standards govern the development of a particular use in any zoning district, and the use and design standards for multifamily uses are intended to provide an attractive street-oriented development with appropriate sidewalk connections as well as open space. The zoning ordinance requires at least one street-facing entrance with principal windows, and the applicant is requesting an exception to this requirement as the buildings are oriented internally within the site while providing a full facade along South Main Street. And here you can see a rendering of the building that was provided by the applicant in their application. The zoning ordinance requires 1.1 parking spaces per bedroom for multifamily developments, and the applicant is proposing 0.94 spaces per bedroom with a minimum of 440 parking spaces. Staff recommends increasing parking or coordinating with Blacksburg Transit to establish a bus stop on site. And the project is required to provide 0.25 bicycle parking spaces per bedroom, and the applicant is meeting the standard by providing 120 spaces, including a bike pavilion with 48 spaces, as well as 9 separate racks surrounded within the development. And here you can see an illustrative master plan that was included within the application. The previous site plan did include a bus turnaround loop to accommodate future Blacksburg Transit service, but the current proposal does remove this feature, eliminating the potential for an on-site bus stop. Staff recommends revising the site layout to accommodate on-site bus service or providing an alternative option for public transportation. The submitted stormwater plan has not yet been approved, and some concerns included off-site grading and off-site retaining walls. Engineering staff did state that further discussions with the applicant would be necessary following the Planning Commission public hearing. As part of the rezone application, the applicant has requested one modification to eliminate the street elevations requirements. And the proffer statement includes proffers for substantial conformance, occupancy restrictions, as well as lease restrictions. And lastly, here's just a little overview of the revisions the applicant submitted on August 27th in response to feedback from the Planning Commission and staff. Included, one building was removed and the site layout was adjusted. The revised plan now includes less units and bedrooms, taking the density down to 49.1 bedrooms per acre. The parking has increased to 0.94 spaces per bedroom, and there is now more open space included. A screening fence was added along the shared property line with St. John Newman Academy, and a revised proffer statement was submitted. And that concludes my application. I'm happy to answer any questions that you all may have for staff.
Any questions for staff? All right. Hearing none, we'll move on to the applicant presentation.
Good evening, Chair Kassoff, member of the Planning Commission. Steve Simonis with Walzer & Associates, 80 College Street in Christiansburg. Thank you for the time this evening. We've talked to you all a couple times about this now as we've made a few changes over the course of this project, primarily picking up the adjacent property from our initial submittal, which required us to come back to you guys again and also have a second neighborhood meeting. As Caroline mentioned, this is 9.77 acres. I think I've got a presentation up there. Just my drawings, I think, put it up there. As you all know, this was the previous Days Inn hotel and restaurant demoed a few years ago. And as I mentioned before, we have had several folks that have looked at this for commercial uses, but with some of the site constraints and some of the site challenges, topography, rock in the area, and access in and out of the site, those commercial uses that we've looked at have not proved viable. So, as we had a previous client look at this residential, they pulled out, and Thomas Builders, who's here tonight, they'd be happy to answer any questions. They looked at this. As we've mentioned to you all, we've worked with Thomas and his team on several projects across Central Virginia, the Roanoke Valley. This is their first foray into the New River Valley, and again, these are market-rate apartments, so they're market-rate builders. And I'll come back to that in a few minutes, but this was exciting to us because this wasn't one of our normal prototypical standard student housing projects that you're going to hear a lot of in a couple weeks, but something that's really geared towards the market rate that we're, you know, severely lacking here in Blacksburg. So the project itself is five four-story apartment buildings, as mentioned. It's a half and half, 50-50 split of one bedroom and two bedroom units, so the same floor plan and same unit mix in each one of the buildings. As you'll notice, and as Caroline mentioned in her presentation from the last time we talked to you guys about 2 weeks ago, we've made a couple more changes. So The biggest one that we did was we pulled out the little half building. So if you all remember, we had 6 buildings when we were at work session. The day or two after we had work session, we were talking about a few of the comments that came up, and Thomas and Garrett looked at it and said, you know, the site's really tight. It feels tight in that area. We talked about having some more good common open space and trying to get our parking ratios up. So they came back to the table with, hey, let's see what it looks like if we remove the 32-unit building. So Gretchen in my office ran a couple different layouts, and what we ended up with was really just moving the short unit, which was there on the far left, kind of in the middle of the site, shifting it over and giving us a much larger green space that's adjacent to our pool and clubhouse area. We also adjusted our parking and our drive aisle layouts. We picked up a few more parking spaces, and then again with the reduction of 32 units, that kicked up our parking ratio to where we're at right now of 1.42 spaces per unit or 0.94 spaces per bedroom. The density we're at right now, I believe there was a typo on the previous presentation, but we're at 320 units and 480 bedrooms. I think it was 460 maybe on that. So that works out to be 32.8 units per bedroom, and the 49.1 beds per acre that Caroline had is correct. So we're just, we're just barely over, that general commercial by right of 48 beds an acre as we drop those 32 units out of that other building. As we've mentioned, several different unit types from a standpoint of square footages based on the layout of the project itself. When we did go back and change the building and drop the density, one thing we didn't change is the covered bike parking, so we still have the same number of covered bike parking spaces. We're at that 120 max, that 25% that we need, but 48 spaces of those are covered in the little area just to the left of our pool right there as well. Couple other points. We looked at this again as how could we lay this out and keep as much of those general commercial standard by right sections of the ordinance from a height standpoint, setback standpoint. So again, we're not trying to push the envelope on this. We're trying to get a use that fits out here that meets the demand of what we're looking for here. And again, is consistent with some of the other market rate projects Thomas Builders has built in the areas I mentioned earlier. We do have, as Caroline mentioned, we did put in the requirement of the proffer of our occupancy. As we mentioned before, that's the same occupancy standard that's set with the new small lot ordinance, so a family plus one or no more than two. So we were fine doing that. Again, these are 1 and 2 bedroom units, so 3, 4, 5 people in an apartment won't work in this layout that we have right now. As we discussed, we had originally did not have Yellow Sulphur as part of this, Holiday Lane as part of our application. We came back and looked at it and requested to vacate half of Holiday Lane after some further discussion with staff, as we talked about a couple weeks ago. We've come back in and revised it to request the vacation of all of Holiday Lane. So when the Jones property came into this project, the need for Holiday Lane as a public right-of-way doesn't exist anymore, since those couple of homes at the end of Holiday Lane aren't going to exist if this is approved and moves forward. So what we've done is we've taken that, incorporated that into the overall parcel size, and then proposed a 10-foot multi-use trail along that section of where Holiday Lane was. That was one thing that came up in our corridor, our couple of corridor meetings, and with staff as well. As you all know, if we have frontage on a public street, we're required to put sidewalk in. Because of this area here and some of the studies that have been done, trail on both sides of both streets was preferred by staff. So we do have that multi-use trail that can connect to Page Left, where Holiday Lane is. And we're also proposing an 8-foot multi-use trail along Yellow Sulphur Road as it goes Page North on the left-hand side of Yellow Sulphur right there. Caroline mentioned water, sewer, stormwater. We did have a traffic study done with a previous application that was a medical use. So what staff allowed us to do there was go back and rerun trip generation for our proposed use, and it showed we had less traffic coming out with this residential use than we would have with the medical use. So what that basically said was that there were no improvements to the road system or the signaling that's out there at Yellow Sulphur and South Main in that area right there. All maintenance will be provided by the applicant and their internal management company. We have one trash location that will be a compactor located right there in the middle of the site. Landscaping around the perimeters. Did want to touch on a few more items. So at our last meeting, we did have some conversation about the loop trail. That was one we discussed a lot. So we went back and looked at that. We did not come back proposing that. What we have done is we did provide an additional sidewalk loop along the right-hand side of building one in the clubhouse. So you do have a walkable path around that internal loop and, you know, ways to get across down to buildings four and five and to get to the trail system. What we were running into, literally and figuratively, was if you go left on the page along that common property line, you'll see a retaining wall. There was no way to make that physical loop to get up to that. The second piece, and we kind of talked about this a little bit in the meeting as well, is we only have about 6 feet of space in there. So with the cars, with the fence, we just felt that was a little tight to want people to walk that way, but the biggest reason was there was nowhere to loop them in, so we were just going to have a dead-end trail there. We do have the screening fence that we mentioned last time we met after my conversation with Director Wharton at St. John Newman. So we do have that shown along that common property line on the south. Caroline mentioned the exception we're requesting. I'm going to scroll through here. As you see, the buildings themselves, they front the parking lot, so they're facing interior to the site, as she mentioned. We do have our clubhouse, and I think I've shown this before. We do have our clubhouse that sits there and has a very attractive facade on all four sides. This is kind of the parking lot view looking at the clubhouse itself. The pool would be on the left. On the right-hand side is where you'd enter into the office and leasing areas. On that right-hand side, though, you'll see a dining patio that's sitting just off to the far side of the building facade there. That actually faces out towards Yellow Sulphur. So we do have a door and windows. It's just not on the residential building. It's on the clubhouse itself. So we are still asking for the exception, just based on the code, that the residential units do not have a front-facing door towards Yellow Sulphur. So that's from the pool elevation. Apartment view. So that's the elevation that's looking out towards Yellow Sulphur. So still a lot of glazing. You've got a door and you've got your dining areas out there. We do have three proffers that we've included substantial conformance with the plan itself, the occupancy restrictions I mentioned earlier. And we did add one more since our last meeting, which was proffering that these will be rented by the unit, not by the bedroom. We had mentioned that in the meeting, so we wanted to go ahead and memorialize that with a proffer. Lastly, to Mr. Ehrman, we talked at the last one about our comprehensive plan. So we know that this is showing commercial area in the comprehensive plan. We're asking for a residential project. We did include, as you noted, you can kind of go through the comprehensive plan and cherry pick pieces out for what you want to see. We do that. You all do that. Staff does that too. But what we tried to look at in this is we really concentrated on the housing piece of it. So this is a housing type we don't have. It's not in a residentially future land use section of town. It is commercial, but we felt like with this project itself, and because of some of the other projects that Thomas Builders has built before, and the one I've mentioned to you all there at the Daleville exit as you're getting off 81, a very similar situation to what we have on South Main Street. Some older commercial buildings that haven't really kept up with the style, with the architecture, with redevelopment. Similar to that off ramp right there at 81, and these guys have gone in, bought an old hotel site, renovated or removed that, and building a new project. So hoping to start sort of a redevelopment of that section right there off of 81. And we see that very similar to this scenario here. So while we are in an urban development area that encourages growth, and we are in Map C, which talks about commercial uses and residentials being supportive of that, we feel that a residential project here is supportive of those commercial uses. We've talked about possibly having people live here that work at the hospital, that work at the CRC. So it doesn't meet the color of the map, but we feel it meets a lot of the intents of what we're looking for in the comprehensive plan. So I will stop there, and I'd be happy to answer any questions as well as the rest of my team.
When we workshopped it last month, mm-hmm. I brought up the, because that's what we did. I brought up the electric bike charging for the pavilion. Is that something you guys?
Yes, I'm sorry. I don't. if I had that in my comment letter or not. We did talk about that, Mr. Ford, and yeah, I apologize for not including that. We did talk about adding some drop down. Now, I'm not an electric bike expert. We talked in-house. I talked to a few of our folks in the office that have them. My understanding is there's not a universal charger for those type of bikes. Right. We did talk and spoke to Garrett about it. Can we drop some electric down in there that you can plug in? So we are planning to do that.
That was my thought. I wasn't thinking bike specific chargers. I was thinking electrical outlets for people's chargers.
Yes, we can have that. I'll include that in an updated memo to staff. Yeah. Because okay. I was picturing something like a car charging station.
Yeah, right. Because we went down that. Okay, that's good to hear. I look forward to hearing about that in the near future.
Can you speak a little bit about the topography of the site and how the buildings are gonna relate to the street?
Sure.
Like what are people gonna see from Main Street topographically? I went up there the other day and kind of rode around and tried to figure it out. And I could kind of picture it, but
yeah, the top two buildings. So if you drive out on the site and you drive up, you're kind of at that upper level where the hotel was. So you've got a terrace site up there. So that's one of the things that some of our previous commercial tenants had problems getting to work from a grading perspective, because they had a bigger building and it was going to have to, you know, you're going to have to pull out a lot of that rock. So we've actually got this building situated where you're pretty much at that plateau. And then you can step down with your grade below that. The two buildings on the lower side, they'll be basically at grade with where Holiday Lane is, a little bit higher, but that'll be your main view from South Main. Kind of the outlier is building three up there in the corner. So right in the corner of the site, you know, in the L shape there, as it goes up to building three, right just to the left of that corner is where the White House sits up there, that you can kind of see from 460 when the leaves aren't on the trees. You can kind of see it a little bit right now. So that will actually sit, the building's not sitting where the house is, it's sort of sitting down the hill a little bit. So from our conversations with St. John Newman, the idea would be to maintain whatever vegetation in that area that we can. So that will be the one that's a little bit different. From a grading perspective, and I think we talked about this last time, The way the grade is going to work in order to get our handicap accessibility from building three down to our trash compactor, you know, we have to have accessibility throughout the whole site. So you'll see a retaining wall off to the left of building three there. That building actually sits down below, so you'd have the wall and your building's going to be down here. So we're not sitting up above the wall. So we're not elevated above the on-ramp there. We're actually sitting down below it. So you're not going to see that building really from the bypass there or the on-ramps. You may see a portion of it coming, you know, as you're coming into town on the bypass past the, you know, the Frog Pond as you're getting to the off-ramp to get on South Main Street.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Any additional questions for the applicant?
I have a question about the new green space in the middle. Is that going to be like a flat open field? What's that going to be
right
like?
Now we're just calling out as managed turf what Thomas and Garrett have said normally, because we talked about this on a couple issues at the last one. What they like to do is have the residents kind of let them know what they'd like to do. So we don't want to put in a gazebo that nobody's going to use. You know, you've got a lot of good outdoor space by your pool, so whether that you know, whether that goes in for some sort of different open space, and they could probably talk to some of the other amenities they've provided in their other sites. We just don't have anything programmed in yet.
Yeah, and I like the idea of waiting and seeing.
We still do have the dog park, the pet area down the lower left hand corner,
but that area will be flat. It's not.
It'll be flat up. It'll have a slope to it. Okay. So you'll the idea would be you'd be leveled up just kind of where it says managed and up, and then you're going to have a gray drop.
Uh-huh.
And then once you hit that lower level where the bike parking is, you'll level out again.
I see.
So you'll have a little bit of a
yeah,
you know, a slope in there.
Great. Anything further for the applicant?
Oh yeah.
Last time we talked about transportation. Any new thoughts about that?
No update other than get back here. So as we talked the last time, we have, when we expanded the parking lot and kind of came into Holiday Lane, we do have the room now that a bus can come into the site. and we talked about going down further into the parking lot. What we've done is we've kind of broken it. We've broken the parking lot a little bit shorter, so just to the left of, if you come up the parking lot from building 5, you see a couple of pink trees right there in the middle of the parking lot. We have a break there, so a bus could, or you know, one of the shorter buses, or even a full-size bus, can actually make it through there. But we haven't changed anything as far as allowing for a full bus turnaround, you know, the loop that was in there previously. We're still open to the conversations with BT about, you know, helping to provide a stop out on Main, but as we talk, there's a lot of other nuances to that, from a pedestrian crossing and signaling and all the rest of it.
Steve, the landscape along the boundary, mm-hmm. Page North, I guess that's actually east, with St. John Newman's. Mm-hmm. Have you had any discussion about the placement of that landscaping?
As of right now, we changed it from evergreens to maybe some medium-sized ornamentals that will get up over the height of the fence line, but not, you know, grow 40, 50 feet tall and block all those eastern views from our residents.
Right.
We've not had any follow-up conversation with St. John since our meeting as far as the idea of possibly putting them on the other side of the bank.
Yeah, you have a tremendous view.
Right.
And, you know, to be able to have a fence and then have screening above that and not take advantage of the view would be a shame. So I hope you could get something worked out where at least the people on the upper floors could appreciate mm-hmm. the view from.
We do have a certain amount of landscaping we have to provide, as you know, Blaine, for canopy coverage. So
the whole corridor through there has been developed over the years. It's like that was, to me, one of the great assets they've had, and not a single business or is taking advantage of that. So.
And we've got, you know, because of the fact we do have some walls, we've got a lot of utilities along Holiday Lane where we wanted to really beef up some buffer along South Main Street there. We're just limited on where we can pick up a lot of that canopy coverage. So we know we've got to get it somewhere on that page north or eastern perimeter somewhere.
Well, and I guess, I mean, it could be lovely to plant some big trees mm-hmm. in that big open space.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, could be something to think about.
Great. With the planning director's consent, I'd like to maybe combine the two public hearings, because the next public hearing is a companion request to vacate the right-of-way. So I'd like to, if it's suitable, like to hear the staff presentation, anything from the applicant, and then we'd open up to public comment, applicant rebuttal, motion discussion on the two hearings. We will have separate votes and separate motions on the two hearings, but since they're so related, I thought we'd just go ahead and follow through on the public hearing that way. Is that suitable? Yeah. Okay. Great.
The right-of-way vacation request, it was a combined presentation.
Oh, so there's no additional presentation. Okay, great. All right. Then with that, we'll move on to public comment. Any public comment regarding this public hearing? Anyone like to address the commission? Hearing none, we'll skip the applicant rebuttal. Yes. And we'll move on to motion and discussion. Do we have a motion on, again, like to address each public hearing independently. So do we have a motion on the rezoning 25-6 ordinance 2091 for the Yellow Sulphur Apartments PRD request?
I move approval of motion of rezoning 25-6 ordinance 2091 as presented by staff.
Second.
I thought we were just going to do the discussion.
No, we'll have.
Well, after the motion, okay.
Yeah.
Motion then.
Second.
Like with the proffers.
With the proffers. Correct. All right. Do we have any discussion?
And the modifications.
And modifications.
The modification request.
We have a motion on the dais. Any discussion regarding rezoning 25-6? ordinance 2091.
I went through the master plan again. I did it before our last meeting. I went through it again, or the comp plan, rather. It's not a matter of, you know, it's not a matter of just cherry picking kind of, you know, of course you can cherry pick anything that says anything, that document's so big. But the core of the document, the kind of spirit of the document, the goals at the top of each section, specifically the connectivity section, the public transportation section, the transportation section, the sections on sustainability, the sections on pedestrian life, the sections on just about everything that's not the need for affordable housing and multifamily housing that addresses beyond students, which definitely aligns with what they're trying to do. But it is all so profoundly antithetical to putting multifamily housing in a what's essentially, not quite, but almost a clover leaf. And to the point of, you know, even the things that they're kind of asking for, which is we're going to face the parking lot, we're going to have a loop that's going to, it's difficult. It's difficult for me to square that circle. If the idea behind a PRD, a public plan residential development, is to say, okay, there are zoning, onerous zoning rules that make it so that something that maybe should be built can't be built, but it's generally aligned with the spirit of the comp plan, our job is to make exceptions to the zoning ordinance so that it can meet the spirit of the comp plan, but I do not believe this meets that threshold.
Additional discussion?
Well, I'll offer a counterpoint to Michael's comments. You know, this has been vacant for some time. If it was a viable, you know, it's very difficult to get in with vehicles. So the commercial aspect of it, I feel like if it was a viable commercial space, it would have had some nibbles and over the past few years. So holding out for the ideal, and then there's the practical aspect of what's going on. What I feel most comfortable about is that the applicants have done an excellent job of trying to honor the underlying current zoning there as far as commercial. I mean, they are just a very small amount above the, so they haven't come in asking for the sky like we get too often with the student housing complexes. And I think they've been thoughtful. They did workshop it with the Planning Commission quite a few times to get where we are today. I believe, again, with the comp plan is what I always explain to people is the future land use map, which is the colored picture. And then we have the chapters, our aspirational chapters about all the different things we hope our community can grow and become. And so the tension and conflict or compromise that we always have to do is balancing what I say the words and the chapters with the picture of the map, and I think it meets the PRD request. You offer flexibility, potentially higher density, which really we're not in the grand scheme of things, for a challenging development site. And in this case, it's not a physical. Like we so often run into with hills and valleys and stormwater and, you know, and adjacent neighborhoods even, we'll say the true thing is I don't think it's a very viable site to maintain at the commercial and hope someone comes in with mixed use. So I'm comfortable supporting this, recommending this to move forward for council to look at.
Thanks, Jerry. I agree. And, you know, even though it may speak most clearly to the housing chapter, it's one of our greatest needs in our community is small ones and twos for non-students. And I also think that it speaks to some degree to the inclusivity of our community, offering, you know, an alternative type of housing that I think that they have, you know, worked tirelessly to try to make it into a community where people will enjoy living in that space. I don't think that we can hold them or any, you know, developer entirely responsible for the future connectivity from their site to everywhere their residents might want to go. And someone has to take the first step for creating the demand for all of the community things we would like to see there, the transportation networks, whether public, you know, bike or pedestrian. And so I hope that this, you know, like you describe in Daleville, might be a first step toward almost revitalizing this space and making better connections across the 460 business to, you know, across that street, because it's not great to cross that street for anybody, but there are a lot of people that go over there to work, and there are a lot of businesses across the street, and more people living here are the things that will propel this area between Blacksburg and Christiansburg, with a little bit of Montgomery County in there, you know, to work toward other plans between all three of our communities. So I'm excited to see this move forward and really view it as a step in the right direction.
I'm very encouraged by this whole process for this particular project. It is a difficult site, and sometimes it's hard to know what compromises to make by looking at the comprehensive plan. And I think you guys have done a great job of recognizing the compromises that you had to make on site in order to make this kind of project work and fit with what I feel is part of the spirit, because you're only slightly over base zoning anyway. I appreciate also that you recognize that it's not just a formula anymore, where we look to see like how many bedrooms we get, and then how you reduce the open space in order to maximize, and then start looking at reduction in parking. That works in a more central part of downtown, where that kind of housing is more feasible because of connectivity issues, and you're able to walk. Here, the reality is you do have to have a car, because it is kind of out on an island. And so it's just as simple as it sounds, but to recognize that this is really based on parking per unit as opposed to parking per bedroom, even though you're there, I think is a recognition. And it's not just a formula that you think council and planning commission are going to buy. And so I hope that kind of thoughtfulness is given into all kinds of projects, in understanding what the need for the project itself is, what kind of compromises you have to make on site in order to make that work. So again, I appreciate the effort.
Any further comment or discussion?
I'd echo a lot of the things that people have said. I think the plan has improved each time we've seen it, and tonight it's a little better than last time. And I think it's nice to see that it's a bit smaller. There's more green space. It would be nice to have that loop trail, but maybe it's impossible to do it. The staff report suggested restoring the bus loop, and I think that would be a nice thing to add to the motion. I think it's hard to know whether it's true that if you build it, they will come, if BT will come, but I would love this project to give every chance to the possibility of some kind of public transit connection. I don't think you need that many bike spaces. I mean, if it's to please the bike riders in this group, I wouldn't bother, because they don't need that many bike spaces for this project. But it would be great to have some hope of a VDOT crosswalk at 460 and a bus stop.
Anything further? Appreciate all the comments, very helpful. We have a motion, we've had discussion, we'll move to a vote. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Great. Moving forward, we'll move on to the right-of-way requests. We've had our staff presentation. Does the applicant wish to make a further presentation on the right-of-way request? Appears we have no public comment. We'll move on to a motion and discussion. Do we have a motion on right-of-way 25-2 companion request?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? All right. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you. We'll now move on to our third public hearing, which is Ordinance 2082, to amend the subdivision ordinance sections 2-100, 2-101, 3-100, 4-101, 4-102, 4-104, 4-105. I'm not going to read them all, but there's a lot. And the ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance sections, multiple sections of the zoning ordinance as well. So we have two ordinances, 2082 and 2083. 2082 is to amend multiple sections of the subdivision ordinance. 2083 is ordinance to amend multiple sections of the zoning ordinance. And we have a staff presentation by Colly Casper.
Thank you. I'll add that there's also Ordinance 2084 to amend further sections of the subdivision ordinance.
Oh, yeah.
So it'll end up being three.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll go over that at the end again.
Thank you.
A little bit of background. This is based on feedback that the manager's office received from the development community. It did involve a subdivision and zoning ordinance stakeholder working group that met from September 2023 to April 2024. This does include recommendations for changes to subdivision and zoning ordinance, as well as some things that will trickle down into the standards and specifications that we use and to town policies. The changes are in three ordinances, 2082, 2083, and 2084. And I'll go through these by topic area. There's a wide range of topics, but they will be in the areas of street design, street construction sequencing, infrastructure timing, subdivision design, and process. And then at the end, we'll have a little bit about General Assembly and some changes that came from the General Assembly, and then also some housekeeping changes as well. The first item here is under, these are street design items, roll top curb. This is from section 5.313 of the subdivision ordinance. The recommendation here is to allow roll top curb in single family residential zoning districts, except in infill situations where the curb and gutter needs to match the adjacent curb and gutter. So where you might already have a standard vertical curb, also known as a CG6, you would match that, or in areas where stormwater conveyance capacity requirements cannot be met. But in all other circumstances, this would be allowing roll top curb, two images of which you can see on the screen here. The next item is for street widths. This is also in the same section of the subdivision ordinance. The recommendation here is to use the current VDOT road widths, which allow for smaller street sections than the town code currently allows, while being a vetted standard that's used widely across the state. This would also require posting signage for no parking areas. Some of those street widths would not allow for parking on both sides of the street, and so parking signage would be needed as well. The next item is sidewalks on both sides of the street. This is from section 5.401. This would require sidewalks on both sides of the street rather than just one side for densities where we're talking about R4 zoning districts or greater. So areas with a quarter acre lots or smaller, also in the rural residential zoning districts as well. And this is just intended to allow for easier movement for pedestrians in areas where you do have that denser development. This would also permit trails in lieu of sidewalk rather than as a variance based on the Paths to the Future map that we have and adjacent existing conditions. So in instances where you have a gap and there's a trail on either side, it makes sense for the thing in the middle to also be the trail. That's what we're trying to allow here. Or in conditions where, as the previous project mentioned, there's an identified route for trail on Paths to the Future map, that's what we're allowing for here. The next item is for sidewalks around the cul-de-sacs. This is another section of 5401 in the subdivision ordinance, and this would be to require sidewalk around the full cul-de-sac. You can see in the bottom of the picture that it currently, with the one side of the street requirement, only goes halfway around. This would be closing that loop. The next item here is medians on arterial and collector roads. This is section 5320 of the subdivision ordinance. The proposal here is to keep the requirement as it is, which does include requiring medians on those two types of streets, but it would also add variance request criteria. And that would consider, if somebody were to request to not build a median, it would consider the need for turn lanes, proposed and allowed density, existing roads versus new roads, and any planning study recommendations, things like the Toms Creek Basin study that was recently completed, or North Main study, any of those types of things. It also would include that intermittent medians, mini roundabouts, and pedestrian refuge islands are desired in these conditions. The next topic area is street construction sequencing, and there are a couple slides on this. For curb and gutter, this is about when things are required, at what time in the construction process for subdivisions things are required. For curb and gutter, there is no change to the requirement proposed. It would be to be completed within 1 year of the final plat, the subdivision plat being approved, and the installation would be required prior to the issuance of any building permits. And all of these items are contained within Section 4602 of the Subdivision Ordinance. For paving, this is a change. It would be to be completed within 1 year of the final plat, with base paving required to issue building permits. That is a change from our current requirement. And then final paving required before the first certificate of occupancy is issued for a structure within the subdivision or as specified in a subdivision agreement. The next item is for trail. There's this one is for it to be completed within 1 year of the final plat. And this, I should say, is trail as an amenity within the subdivision as opposed to trail in lieu of sidewalk. And that second item is for sidewalk or when trail is proposed in lieu of sidewalk. It would require completion within 1 year of the issuance of the first certificate of occupancy for either the subdivision or the phase. And it would have an allowance for a 6-month renewal agreement to delay completion due to weather. So that would be, you know, if you're not able to do concrete or asphalt at that timing. And then criteria for timing can also be considered and codified in the subdivision agreement here. Things like whether the sidewalk is along a primary road, through streets, first cul-de-sac streets, the number of lots, and logical break locations based on the block layout. The next subject area is infrastructure timing, and there's only one item within this section. This is for Section 4600 of the Subdivision Ordinance. This is for enforcement for subdivisions when the infrastructure isn't fully completed. This would allow for, or continue allowing for, subdivisions to use the no bond option, but it would restrict the process to prohibit people from switching between using a bond and not using a bond during a project or a phase. So this is just the idea that at the outset, when the plan is approved, everyone is on the same page of whether a bond will be used for construction of infrastructure or whether it won't be. The next several will cover areas over subdivision design. The first is for flag lots. This impacts both Section 5200 in the Subdivision Ordinance as well as the Zoning Ordinance Section 2103. And the Zoning Ordinance section is for the definitions specifically. So there are some changes, just clarifications to the definitions. And then in the Subdivision Ordinance, this would revise flag lot regulations to include the following standards, where no structures are permitted on the pole of the lot. There's a maximum length of 200 feet for the pole length. No more than two poles can be abutting. So the picture on the right shows three poles abutting and four poles abutting. That would not be permitted. It also includes that once these flag lots are platted, you cannot further subdivide them into additional flags. And it also includes that setbacks for structures are measured from the flag portion of the lot rather than the pole, and that open space lots are exempt from these regulations. Next item is maximum cul-de-sac length. This is Section 5310 of the Subdivision Ordinance. This would be a revision to allow for, currently the standard is for 900 feet in length. This would allow for a maximum of a maximum of 250 vehicular trips that would be generated by the lots in the subdivision. Which equates to, for single family, usually equates to about 25 houses, but not to exceed 1,200 feet in length. It would also include a T turnaround for cul-de-sacs where we expect future connectivity to occur, and signage would be required for that as well to show that the street would connect in the future. It also includes additional criteria for variances, such as incompatible adjacent zoning, conservation easements, water features, topography, and limited access highways. The next item is driveways on collectors and arterials. This is section 5318 of the subdivision ordinance. This speaks to how variances are granted for requesting driveways on either arterials or collectors. So there are multiple categories here. To request a driveway on an arterial, it would require a variance that would come before you all as the Planning Commission, regardless of the number of lots. For driveways on collectors, the split would be for six or more lots, it would come to Planning Commission, and for five or less lots, it would require an administrative variance. And then it also includes additional criteria for consideration of when variances are requested, including driveway spacing, the ability to provide shared driveways, traffic volumes, site distance, environmental constraints, and other access options for those subdivided lots. Another area we're talking about for driveways is driveway grades. This is section 5204 within the zoning ordinance. There was a fair amount of discussion on this topic. We are proposing to retain the same maximum driveway grade of 12% overall, but it would allow for a revision for sections of that to driveway grade to go up to 18%. And it would still require landings at the entrance and the garage as well. And there's an image here showing a steeper driveway, and then also the graphic that would be included in the ordinance to show how that's measured. Okay, this one is a little bit of a two-part one. We found as we went through the process that several sections were regulating connectivity for subdivisions. These sections include 5103, 300, 302, 303, and 305. And the revisions that are being proposed are primarily to 302, 303, and 305. The idea here is to require a minimum of two connection points for subdivisions, and to be clear about what those connection points include, whether it's a physical street or a future stub out to an adjoining property or to a future phase within the same development. And then it also speaks to what is required for road construction, which would need to occur in the subdivision to the depth of a lot, but not to exceed 500 feet in length. And then in areas where greater than 500 feet in of length are needed, it would require proof of feasibility for a future connection, right-of-way dedications, and construction easements to ensure that the road can be constructed in the future when the adjoining property or the adjoining phase is developed. And it would also say that if a road is not constructed to the property line, it does not count as one of the minimum of the two connection points that are required. And then we also included some variance criteria here, whether it would be administrative or Planning Commission variance. This would be that the adjoining property is already completely built out and there are no opportunities for stub outs to connect, or the adjoining property zoning is not compatible with respect to trip generation. So that could be something like something significantly more dense connecting to something, significant maybe residential density connecting to commercial, something like that, where they're not compatible. And then the last one is no reasonable connection is possible. And that goes back to the similar criteria around things like conservation easements and topography, water features, things like that. Okay, the next item here is driveway intersection distance. This one's pretty straightforward. We're basically replacing an existing diagram. It still shows the same thing, but it's for clarity. So the one on the left is the existing, and the one on the right is the proposed. And then the last one within the subdivision design topic area is for public utility easements. This is found in section 5806 and 5901, as well as in the water and sewer specifications. The idea here is to keep the 15-foot standard for public utility easements, but to be clear that sometimes greater or smaller easements may be required or needed. And it sets out criteria for what those, how that's evaluated, the depth and type of utility and the maintenance access needs, the types of utilities in interior and perimeter public utility easements, and around separation requirements for utilities and stormwater facilities as well. This section would also clarify that interior public utilities are not required for attached units, as shown in the top. You know, when townhouse units are attached, we don't currently require that, but we're just clarifying that in the text. Okay, this is the last category here. This is for process. We have a couple items here. One is to update references in our traffic impact analysis requirements. This is section 5307 of the subdivision ordinance. This is to change references to VDOT documents, clarifying those, and it also adds language that the tools that are used for traffic impact analysis are to be agreed upon by the town and the developer at the outset of the planning of the project. Then we also have several sections that we're proposing modifications to for the preliminary plat process, all within the 4200. The process is somewhat cumbersome now, and the consensus was that preliminary plat should be a proof of concept and not need as much detail as a final plat does. The proposal here was to revise the process to not include a public hearing, to reduce the level of detail required at the stage. Things like easements, parking, stormwater management, TIA, those could be done at the final plat and site plan stage. And then the note at the bottom here is that in the meantime, state law has also changed. So this relates to the next slide. There were General Assembly changes, and this did remove Planning Commission review of subdivision plats. So you'll see several sections here that are changing within the subdivision ordinance, and this is to come into compliance with those General Assembly changes. It also shortened the review period for site plan and subdivision applications. So the all of those sections from the subdivision ordinance address that, and then there's one section, 5110, from the zoning ordinance, which specifically addresses site plan review timelines that's also proposed to change. The last item here is some housekeeping changes. These are clarifications, updates, updating references, document names have changed, things like that, and then also removing duplication. A public meeting was held on Thursday, August 14th. The notes, the sign-in sheet, and then also questions that we received through the Let's Talk website have been included in the staff report. You all had a work session in August, and the public hearing is tonight, and it will go forward to Town Council following your recommendation. As I mentioned, this item has been on the Let's Talk Blacksburg page as opposed to the regular public hearing page. For ease of use, there were some areas that we wanted to be able to detail some things that Let's Talk worked for us. So you're asked to make a recommendation on each ordinance separately, and this is the summary showing which sections are included in each of the ordinances. That concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Questions for Colley? Any public comment?
Figured I'd say something. Steve Simonis, 80 College Street. I had the opportunity to serve on the Stakeholder Committee on behalf of the New River Valley Home Builders Association, and just wanted to thank staff for including us in this process. It's something we deal with on a daily basis. There was a lot of, Mr. Kassoff was on that as well, and a lot of good discussion back and forth, but we actually asked Colley and Andrew to come give a presentation, kind of a precursor to this piece of it, to our home builders board of directors, just give them an idea of what we had come to consensus on, and everybody really appreciated that. So thank you for allowing us to be a part of, and we're in full support of the recommendations.
Thank you. So having public comment, so we'll take we'll vote, have a motion and a vote on each individual ordinance.
Right.
Ordinance 2082 to amend the subdivision ordinance sections multiple. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Should we vote on each one independently? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Discussion. Yeah. Any discussion?
Any discussion?
Thanks to the staff.
Great. So we have a motion on ordinance to approve. All those in favor?
Aye.
Ordinance 2083 to amend the zoning ordinance sections 2103, 5110, and 5204. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
And ordinance 2084 to amend the subdivision ordinance multiple sections and the five series. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
I have one question.
Sure.
I think we received one letter today or email today. Could you maybe clarify the 500 feet?
Yes.
And my question is, does that require the construction of that, of the road, or does it require the design of the road that shows that could be built in the future to make that connection?
So the construction is required to the depth of a subdivided lot, but not to exceed 500 feet. And then anything that does exceed 500 feet requires proof of feasibility, right-of-way dedication, and construction easements. And what I would say about this section specifically, this is 5302, is that this clarifies what is already required. Currently, construction is required to the property line, period, regardless of the length. So this is a standard that allows for additional flexibility in construction of those roads to the property line.
So when it says the depth of 500 feet, is that like beyond the front lot line of the last lot, or is that in contemplating that's a corner lot beyond the depth?
Primarily, it's considering a corner lot. I think in the way that when it was reviewed and drawn up, it was looking at the depth of a lot usually being, you know, maybe 100 to 200 feet, something along those lines, that it would consider the depth of the lot on a corner.
So it's not beyond, like if you have a two row of lots and the end and the road goes on, it's not 500 feet beyond that, where essentially you'd have 500 feet of road frontage on two sides where there are no lots.
Right.
It does not contemplate
right.
that.
Right, it's not contemplating okay. that. It's contemplating the depth of the lot. But if you had very deep lots, or say you had like an open space lot or a remainder lot, that's where the piece would come in around the 500 feet. To not exceed that 500 feet.
So if you had a large subdivision and you're going to do phases and phase one stops, but future phase two, three goes beyond, essentially they'd have to build a road 500 feet beyond phase one into phase two. Or is that an administrative question?
Yeah, I think it depends on the subdivision layout. It's hard to answer that without.
There would be just some discretion?
Yes.
Fast part on that situation like that?
Yes, and I would say that there's also still a variance process. So a variance process could be considered for either the minimum of the two connection points that's laid out clearly, and then this section is also still subject to section 2200, which is the variance process for the whole subdivision ordinance. So I do
think there's a process.
There is a process for that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a follow-up? That email made... The email comment made it sound like we were requiring 500 feet
be built.
To be built.
Yes.
But what you've explained And what your slide, I believe, explains well is that it's really the depth of a lot.
Correct.
Which, would you say, what was the normal? I mean, a lot of times for an R4 lot or something, it would be.
Yeah, it could be 200 feet, maybe.
200 feet. So it, and so the 500 really is putting kind of an upper limit of what someone might be responsible for, mm-hmm. as opposed to you, right. thou shall. It's right. more the, like, but yeah.
The okay. depth of a lot, but not to exceed
yeah.
the 500.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
I think it's good it's being addressed now.
Yeah.
So to so there's an understanding now rather than passing it and later on it comes to question.
But you did say that this is really more a clarification of what already exists. Is it clear? More clear?
The current regulation requires, all right, so I'm going to go into a little bit of detail here. The current requirement is for, it reads that the subdivider shall make provision for the dedication to the town of proposed street extensions, and then it goes on. And that came into question, and then there was a zoning interpretation that was clarified that dedication does include both construction and right-of-way dedication to the property line. That was then appealed to the Board of Zoning Appeals, and that was then confirmed by the Board of Zoning Appeals. So while the language currently states dedication, and that may be unclear in that language, it was clarified by interpretation and then by Board of Zoning Appeals. So what is currently required is construction to the property line. And this require this is a, I would say, a less stringent standard. It makes allowances for less road to be constructed and then for proof of feasibility and dedication and construction easements for the remainder of the length. Yeah. Does that help?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That discussion took us a long time to get our head wrapped around. Yeah. But ultimately, it's...
I appreciate the work the committee did, and I'm sure they did a thorough job, but it did make me kind of go...
It was a weird...
Clarification for my own...
It was a weird piece. Good. Thank you for that discussion. So we have a motion on the table for Ordinance 2084. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
We'll move on to citizen comment. You can address the Planning Commission on any subject. Hearing none, we'll move on to unfinished business, zoning ordinance review committee. We have not met. Historic or design review board.
With the report.
Montgomery County Planning Commission.
I attended the August 13th meeting. Not that it was my turn, but I did it as part of the Planning Commissioner's class I'm taking, and it was very informative. There wasn't a whole lot on the agenda itself, but they didn't go into work session, and that was very informative. They had a very nice presentation by the, I guess, assistant director reporting on the work that's being done on the comprehensive plan update and kind of outlining where they are, and they're kind of like looking at specific villages right now. One of which would be of interest to us, obviously, is that the area off South Main, just beyond the town limits. And I understand, Andy, you are part of that. Yeah. So they did an excellent job presenting what the summary of where they are on that now. And so that was very good work. And then also there was a summary of where they are in some of their disaster planning, things like clear zones around houses and forested areas and things like that. So.
It's been a good process.
Yep.
Thank you. Any additional items from Planning Commission members? All right, hearing none, we'll move on to new business chair's report. I have none. Planning director's report and town council report.
I have nothing.
Thank you. We stand adjourned. Thank you for coming.